Hi, welcome back to Joe Blogs. This video is the next in a series looking at the financial implications of Russia's invasion of Ukraine on the global economy. And in today's video, I want to talk to you about insurance. So insurance is something that we all need, and we take for granted that we can get insurance and it'll be cost effective. And we know that when we insure something, we've got peace of mind that if something goes wrong in the future, then we can make a claim and get paid our money back. But the flip side of that peace of mind and the fact that it's embedded in our everyday existence means that it's an important cost in our household budget. But it's not just personal insurance that I want to talk about today. Business insurance is a really big part of international trade and is something that's been impacted heavily by the Ukraine crisis. So in this video, I'm going to go through all the different aspects of insurance. So we'll look at business insurance, we'll look at buildings insurance, we'll look at the aviation sector, we'll talk about what insurance is and the costs of it to the insurance companies, and how the costs of this war to the insurance company are going to impact on both your daily life and also on the global economy. So before we get into all of that, if I could ask you to give me a thumbs up at some point during this video if you're enjoying the content, and also to subscribe if you haven't done so already. And don't forget that I always include chapters in my videos, so if there's a section you're not that interested in, it's really easy to skip over it. And if you'd like to support the channel, please have a look in the description below where you'll find a link to both Buy Me a Coffee and Patreon.
Insurance is a contract between an individual and an insurance company that spreads risk in exchange for premium payments. The insurance company accomplishes this by charging enough in premium payments from the insured participants to exceed the amount the company has to pay out for insured losses. Insurance companies base charges on their actuarial calculation of the risk they insure. Insurance has been in existence for centuries, dating back to the 2nd and 3rd centuries BC, when merchants paid an extra fee to shipping companies for reimbursement if their cargo was lost at sea. In order for insurance to be profitable, it must be the kind of loss that happens often enough so that there is a pool of insured people willing to pay premiums. In addition, the covered loss must be calculable so that the insurance company can estimate the frequency of losses and how much the loss might be. One major legal constraint on insurance is that the person receiving the indemnification must have an insurable interest. This is what distinguishes insurance from gambling. For instance, Fred could not purchase fire insurance on his neighbor's house because Fred would not suffer any financial loss if his neighbor's house burned down.
So that's what insurance is, but how do insurance companies actually make profit? Well, the easiest example to talk about is life insurance. So if you want to take out life insurance policy that pays out $10,000 in the event of your death, the way an insurance company will price that policy is they will look at how old you are, how healthy you are, and what your life expectancy is forecast to be based upon a number of different factors. So if you're looking for a policy that pays out $10,000, the insurance company will work out how much the monthly premium needs to be to make sure that they make some profit on that policy on average. So they will ask you a variety of different questions, whether or not you smoke, whether there's any history of heart disease or other serious illnesses, what job you do, whether you're married, whether you have any children, all of those different questions will then build up a profile which gives the insurance company the ability to forecast your average life expectancy. So if you're a healthy, non-smoking female, age 30, they may forecast that your life expectancy is 80 years. And therefore, they will know that on average, if you start a policy, you'll be paying into that policy for 50 years. So the monthly premium may be set at $30 per month. And over a 50-year period, that would guarantee that the insurance company is going to receive $18,000. So therefore, it would be heavily in profit. But it will be even more in profit because the insurance company doesn't take your monthly premium and just leave it lying in the bank. They will invest that money. So insurance companies are also fund managers. So a lot of the big insurance companies also run pension funds and big fund management arms. And what they will do is take that monthly premium and invest it. So they'll invest it into the stock market and into property and a variety of other assets with a view to making a return on that money. So if they can take that $18,000 over the lifetime of that policy and double that money or treble that money, then they will turn that into $30,000 or $40,000 or $50,000. Now, the policy only pays out $10,000 in the event of your death, so there is a big profit to be made by the insurance companies. But all of this depends upon them getting their algorithms right and getting their forecasting right. Because if you die the day after you take out your policy, they'll have to pay you $10,000 and they'll have only received one premium. So there is a risk factor with all insurance companies. So they need to constantly be reevaluating their systems, making sure they've got their calculations right to make sure that they've got some profits to ensure the future viability of the insurance company itself. So the insurance industry is entirely based on forecasting probability and the law of averages. They know that on average, people will live to around 80 years of age. So if you die early, you'll be offset by lots of other people who'll live to 90 or 100 or 110. So on average, people are dying aged 80 and they know that they're going to make some money. So what types of insurance are there and how does it affect you? Well, depending on you and your lifestyle and what you do, you may have multiple insurance policies. If you drive a vehicle, then you'll need to have that vehicle insured. In most countries around the world, it is a law to have insurance because when you go out on the road, if you cause an accident or you do something that injures somebody else, you'll need to be insured for that so that they can make a claim against you to either repair their car or if they've got personal injuries that are life affecting, they will sue you and want some compensation for that. So car insurance is something that a lot of people have and most people are familiar with that type of insurance. If you own a property, then you've probably got two different types of insurance that relate to that property. You'll have buildings insurance that relate to something happening to the building. If you have a fire or a flood or there's an explosion or something happens to the actual structure of your building, you'll be able to make a claim to rebuild the house. And you're also likely to have contents insurance. So that's actually insuring all of the things within your house, all of your personal possessions. So again, if there was a fire, you'd need to be able to replace all of the things in your house. Or if you get burgled and somebody steals a lot of your items, you want to be able to replace them without having to pay the full cost yourself. But even if you don't own a property, you may well have personal possessions insurance. So a lot of people have insurance for their mobile phone or their bicycle or just general coverage in the event of something happening to all of your personal possessions because it's very difficult to replace everything that you own if you lose it all in a fire. Health and life insurance are also very common policies that a lot of people have. So life insurance is what we just discussed. In the event of your death, it pays out to your relatives. But health insurance is a really important thing in a lot of countries. So most countries around the world, you have to pay for medical care, and therefore you want to have some form of insurance in the event that something happens to you, you need some emergency treatment or you become ill, and you need to be able to pay for the medication and the services that you're receiving. And finally, business insurance is one of the major groups of insurance these days. All businesses around the world will need a variety of insurances, whether it's insuring the building that they're operating within, whether it's trade credit insurance, so they're actually insuring their business with other countries and other counterparties, or whether it's insuring for their employees in the event that there's an accident and somebody makes a claim against the company, or insurance for intellectual property rights. So if you get sued, that somebody says that you're stealing their copyright or their ideas, or cyber insurance, which is a growing part of the market. And this is protecting against cyber attacks and companies coming against you and trying to destroy the software in your business and bring your business to a grinding halt. So you can see how many different types of insurance there are. And depending on what you do and how complicated your life is, you may find that you've got 10 or 15 or 20 different insurance policies that affect you. And therefore, you're having to pay the premiums on these policies every single month. And it's now a really big part of everybody's household budget and a really big part of all businesses' budgets. Business insurance is essentially the same concept as what I've just talked about for life insurance, but it's based on different factors and different probabilities. So there's more expertise needed and a lot more analysis. So if you're a business and you're doing trade internationally, you'll need to insure that trade in the event of something untoward happening. So if you're an exporter, for example, and you're exporting goods, you'll need to insure those goods in case something happens to them in transit. So the ship that you put them on sinks. Or if something happens at the port and your goods get damaged and therefore are worthless before they reach your buyer. or other business-related matters such as your buyer going bust and all of your goods being seized before they've paid you or something untoward like that. So there's a variety of different ways of insuring business. And the insurers look at your business, they look at your track record, they look at the companies that you're dealing with and what their creditworthiness is, and they'll look at the country risk. So if you're doing business with Germany, then that will be deemed to be lower risk than if you're doing business with Indonesia or Sri Lanka or Peru. And business insurance has become a huge industry over the last 30 years and is now a really important cost of all businesses. It's essential to have business insurance. You need it to cover your business, but also you'll need it to do trade with counterparties. They will want to see that you are fully insured. So this is a really important part of the global economy, and the cost of insurance, and the cost of insurance is a really important factor when you're putting together a bid and tendering for new work. So in terms of the cost of this war, if we look at Ukraine first, if you've seen the images coming out of Ukraine, you will have seen that there are thousands and thousands of buildings that have been damaged by the military conflict. We've seen lots of tower blocks that have been blown up. The front has fallen off. You can actually see into the bedrooms of a lot of these properties. Those properties have been destroyed and are completely unstable and need to be demolished and rebuilt. But it's not just properties that have been impacted in Ukraine. We've also seen a lot of the infrastructure has been damaged. So we've seen that some of the power stations have been hit. We've seen factories that have been blown up, the railways, the roads. Basically, every single part of some of the cities in Ukraine have been completely destroyed and need to be rebuilt entirely. But it's not just the buildings and the infrastructure that's been damaged in Ukraine. Anybody that's been running a business in Ukraine has been severely impacted. Millions of people have left Ukraine. So all of those people who were working have left their companies. They're no longer working for them in Ukraine. So the impact on business and the loss of earnings and the loss of profit is astronomical. It's very difficult to be able to put an estimate onto these figures, but the loss is going to be enormous, in tens of billions of dollars. And it's not just business that's been impacted. If you think about all of the agriculture in Ukraine, that's all come to a stop. So we've got damage in terms of physical damage, but we've got business interruption damage, loss of trading, loss of activity, and loss of future profits. Because even if this war stops tomorrow, they can't restart all of these businesses overnight. A lot of these companies have been damaged irreparably. You can't just get all of your people back. If your office has been blown up, then obviously you can't start trading. But there's also the continuity factor of losing the relationship with your clients, losing your market position, and the list goes on. So the damage that's been caused to Ukraine is absolutely enormous. And a lot of this damage will be insured. And the problem is that the insurers are going to have to pay out tens of billions of dollars to all of these companies, all of these individuals, everybody who is owning all of that property. The claims are going to be absolutely enormous. But it doesn't even stop there. It's not just the physical claims and the business claims. There's also the debt to talk about. So when an institution provides a loan, it can take insurance on that loan in the event that it doesn't get repaid. So a lot of the debt that Ukraine has built up, a lot of the companies that have debt who are no longer in a position to be able to service or repay that debt, they're going to default on that debt. And the people who provided those loans can now call in any form of debt insurance that they've got. So there's a third level to this debt that will impact on the international insurance markets because somebody is providing that insurance, they're giving that cover in the unlikely event that these Ukraine companies were not going to be able to repay. Now that event is happening, those insurance companies are going to have to dig their hands in their pockets and make those payments. So the insurance companies are going to be hit really hard by what's happened in Ukraine. But it's not just Ukraine that's going to have an impact here. Russia is also going to have a really big impact on the insurance market. And that sounds crazy because you're thinking, well, what does Russia have to do with it? Because Russia haven't been invaded, none of their buildings have been damaged. But this is all to do with international trade and debt. So the sanctions that have been brought in by all of the developed world against Russia have had a devastating impact on Russian businesses and also on any companies in the Western world who've been trading with Russia. So we've talked about it a lot on the channel. There are a lot of exporters to Russia. Russia buys a lot of stuff from the rest of the world. So all of that trade has now been lost because it's completely embargoed. Nobody's allowed to export anything to Russia anymore. So all of that lost business, those companies will be making claims on their insurance policies. So they took out that insurance in the unlikely event that the Russian company couldn't pay or something else happened, and all of those events have now triggered. So that means we're going to have claims of tens of billions of dollars. And a good example is the airline industry. So if you follow the channel, you'll know that there's been over 750 planes that are in Russia currently that have been seized by the Russian authorities. So these planes have all been leased and are owned by international leasing companies all based outside of Russia. So those companies have now lost their assets and are making claims on their policies. AerCap is the world's largest aircraft leasing business, and it's recently submitted a claim for $3.5 billion for those lost assets. And we will see similar claims from all of the other aircraft leasing businesses. So there'll be a variety of claims for loss of assets, loss of earnings, loss of profits, loss of everything. So you may be sitting there thinking, why should I care about insurance companies losing any money? The industry makes tens of billions of profit every year anyway, so they can afford it. Who cares? Well, the problem that you've got is that all of these businesses are run to make a profit. So if they suffer a loss in any one individual year, they will need to make that loss back up in the future. And they'll do that by increasing the cost of insurance. So the estimated $35 billion that the insurance companies are likely to lose as a result of this conflict is going to be recouped by all of those businesses by increasing the cost of insurance to you for your car and for your house and for your health insurance and for your life insurance and for your business insurance and any other form of insurance that you can think of. So ultimately, what all of this means is that the cost of insurance is going to go up. In the future, we will be paying more to insure absolutely everything. And also what will happen in terms of the world of business is that the insurers are now wise to this event. They've seen what's happened and they'll be including exclusions in those policies. So what will happen is the policies will say in the future, in the event of a war, we will not be paying you out for any losses. So business will be less covered in the future and will have to take more of the losses on themselves. So that's going to mean that businesses are more cautious about doing business with countries that have the potential to have military conflict, and therefore it reduces the amount of appetite for business and reduces the amount of world trade. So we've got a double whammy impact here. We've got cost increase and we've also got contagion in terms of people deciding that they may not want to do trade with countries that they deem to be politically unstable. And that generally leads to a contraction in terms of GDP because companies will be less keen to do more international business. So what's the summary and conclusion today? Well, insurance is a really important factor for all of us in all of our lives. Whether you're insuring your phone or your life, it doesn't make any difference. It's still a premium that you're paying in the event of something happening in the future. It's basically a way of spreading unexpected costs. Because if your phone gets stolen, you don't want to have to pay hundreds of dollars to replace it. You just call on the insurer and he'll do it for you. And the problem that we've got here is that most of the impact of the Ukraine crisis is insured. So everybody's going to be claiming on their insurance policies, and the insurance companies are likely to pay out anything up to $35 billion. And this is completely unexpected. 3 or 4 months ago, these insurance companies were not planning to pay out $35 billion in the event of a Ukraine war. So this has come out of the blue, and therefore they're now having to recalculate all of their costs, all of their premiums, and how much they're going to charge you in the future to renew your car policy or your health policy or whatever it might be. And so the bottom line on all of this is that it's adding more cost to the global economy. This is going to increase the cost of doing business, and it's going to increase your costs on a monthly basis. All of your insurance policy costs are going up. That is an absolute fact as a result of this war. So that means that you'll have less disposable income each month because you're now paying more out in insurance, which you didn't really want, because you're not getting any additional benefit for that. You don't feel that it's worthwhile. You don't feel you're getting better value for money. In fact, you're getting worse value for money because you're getting the same level of cover for a higher cost. So once again, I wanted to highlight how a war in Eastern Europe, in a country that you're completely unfamiliar with, is now having a direct impact into your life and your monthly budget. And ultimately, the problem with all of this is that it's going to mean that we've got less spare cash kicking around in the economy. Therefore, it means we'll spend less. And we're at a time when a lot of people have got high levels of debt. Interest rates are going up because we've got high inflation. And so all of this is pointing towards a slowdown in the global economy, reduction in GDP, and the increased probability of a global recession. And these changes to insurance costs will be brought in rapidly. This will happen over the next few weeks and months. You will see an increase in the prices. As soon as you go to renew your policy, you'll find that it's more expensive than it was last year. And that's on top of the increase in fuel costs and the increase in food costs and the increase in absolutely everything else. So unfortunately, I don't have any good news for you today. The bottom line here is insurance costs are going up, and that's increasing the likelihood of a global recession. So hopefully you found this video interesting, useful, and educational. If you've liked what I've said today, then please give me a thumbs up. And don't forget to subscribe if you haven't done so already. Hey guys, just a quick update on Joe Blogs 2. This is the secret section at the end of the video that only the hardcore fans are watching. The new channel is going really well. We've got well over 1,000 subscribers, so we've massive tick on the box for that one. So thank you very much if you're one of those subscribers. I really appreciate it. But we still need some watch time. We still haven't got to that 4,000 hours of watch time yet. And we need to get that metric ticked in order to be eligible for monetization, in order to start this experiment for real. So if you've got the time, please jump onto the channel, watch one or two of the videos, or press the playlist and just let it run in the background on your browser. And that's going to help us achieve that goal. And alongside that, you should also be thinking about whether or not you're going to start making some videos. If you are, start thinking about what you're going to make. What works really well on YouTube is having a clear message for your viewer. Tell them what it is you're going to explain in your video or what it is you're doing. Make it easy to follow. Make it nice and structured. So start systematically, have a nice explanation at the beginning, and then build it up. So work out what you're going to do before you start doing it. Have a look at my videos. They're a really easy format to follow. You'll see that I break it down into sections. And so that makes it easier for you to be able to structure a really nice video that gets people to watch all the way to the end. So once again, thanks very much for supporting the Joe Blogs 2 experiment, and thanks for watching to the end of this video.